This is the Dope Farm Podcast. Welcome back to another edition of the Dope Farm Podcast. This is Wynn, and I'm your host. Let me start out by saying I apologize for my tardiness in getting these podcasts recorded. Life gets in the way sometimes. You get busy. It takes time to record and edit these things. And so sometimes it seems a little overwhelming, and I'm really just getting started. This is my 10th episode, and I'm hopefully the content that I'm providing is worth your time. I want to reiterate the fact that I am holding a contest right now, and all you have to do to enter to win 3 audiobooks by Franklin Horton is to go to the Dup Farm Podcast episode 9 and go there and make a comment. And I mean, all you have to do is say, hey, what's up? I don't care. But the Dope Farm Podcast, number 9, go there, make a comment, and you'll be entered to win. I'm going to run it for another week. Right now, there's only one comment. So for that one person that has made the comment, there's a good chance you might be the winner. So anyhow, go there, make a comment, and get entered to win 3 great books by a really good author. And I think you'll enjoy it if you'll take the time. So and if you're not into audiobooks, man, y'all, you really need to. It's a great way to be able to consume information regardless of what it is. So go there, sign up for Audible. I think you can get 1 or 2 free credits now if you sign up. Check it out, try it out. I mean, I don't get anything from telling you this, so I'm a big fan. It's just as much time as I spend on a tractor. It's a good way to consume information, both via podcasts and audiobooks. So let's move on into George Washington's Rules of Civility. We're on rule number 8. And rule number 8 states, at play and at fire, it's good manners to give place to the last comer, and affect not to speak louder than ordinary. So, I mean, this one is kind of interesting in the fact that basically they're, you know, if you're out hanging out, playing around, I guess you could look at it like at a dinner or something like that, or hanging out around a fire. If someone comes up late, you give up your seat or you give up your spot so that they feel welcome. And you know, don't get too loud, unruly. I mean, that's the way I look at that. I looked for some layman's explanation of some of these, but there's really not much out there. So I guess you just have to deal with my crude commentary. So anyway, yeah, that's, you know, these rules are great to be able to look at and to live by. So let's go on and get into the weed of the week. And this week, I'm looking at the arrowhead or the duck potato, also known as the wapato. And the botanical name is the Sagittaria lafoila. So what is a duck potato or an arrowhead? I first heard about the duck potato in one of Angry American's books, Chris Weatherman. He writes a series called Going Home, And in that series, there in one of the books, I can't remember. I believe it was probably the Escaping Home. Maybe that's, I don't recall exactly. But they had to bug out and they went to an area. And the main character is just full of all kinds of useful, I don't want to say useless, but useful knowledge. And one of the things they came up with was the duck potato, the wapato. They were looking, they were trying to survive. They were trying to make their way the best they could. And so the main character said, hey, look, there's some, you know, duck potatoes. And they were like, what are you talking about? And it explains in the book, he goes into some pretty good detail, but I'm going to read from survivallandusa.com. And they have a pretty good write-up. They have a picture. If you go to my website, the Dope Farm podcast.com, and look at episode 10, I have a link to their website here. And the again, they state the botanical name, the arrowhead or duck potato, wapato, or catnip plant. And it says look for them during the autumn, spring, and summer. And they have a what looks like one of the, yeah, it's a map from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and it shows the wapato's spread, and it's basically in every state and most of Canada, with the exception of Alaska and Nevada, it looks like. And so it's a pretty wide-ranging plant. I mean, even Hawaii, Puerto Rico, the District of Columbia. It's an interesting plant. So the Sagittaria latifolia is a vigorous, deciduous, marginal aquatic perennial that typically grows submerged in shallow water or out of the water on wet, muddy banks. It grows 1 to 4 feet tall. The common names of the duck potato and wapato are in reference to the edible and large, rounded, starchy, golf ball-sized tuber that form the ends of the underground plant runners or rhizomes. The plant was once an important source of food for Native Americans, and the wapato is one of the names they gave it. These and similar plants were also referred to by indigenous Americans as catnip plants. You can read more about the history of the name here. The sap is milky. However, these are the exception to the avoid plants with milky sap edibility rule. Habitat: sloughs, swamps, marshes, and margins of streams and ponds, common and widespread. Identification: it's a perennial. The leaves. Leaves grow in a clump. Arrowhead-shaped leaves are typically 4 to 12 inches long and 2 to 6 inches wide, but immersed leaves can grow up to a foot and a half long. Submerged leaves are often much narrower and are linear to ovate. Leaves and flowers are produced on separate stalks. Flowers, 1 inch wide, 3-petaled, white or pink-tinged with green or yellow centers. Whorls of 3 grow atop stalks, risen to 4 feet tall. Harvest and preparation. Dislodge the tubers from the mud in late fall to early spring with a hoe, stick, or your feet. Tubers will float to the surface and are easily collected. Pulling the greenery will usually only break it off. If eaten raw, they have an unpleasant, acrid taste. If eaten cooked, they have a pleasant, sweet taste. Arrowhead tubers are first washed and then cooked by frying or boiling for 15 minutes in salt water, or by roasting them for 30 minutes at 350 degrees. After cooking, they may be peeled. If not consumed, they are dried and sliced or mashed and stored for the winter. If dried, allow 20 minutes of soaking before adding to recipes. Medicinal uses. Native Americans ground the rhizomes and used as a tea for indigestion. Pulverized rhizomes were also used in poultices for wounds and sore. A tea made from the leaves was used to relieve rheumatism and to bathe babies with fever. Ground leaves were used in a poultice to stop milk production. Handling plant may cause dermatitis in some people. Poisonous lookalikes, none. So, and they have a listing here of the resource that this came from. So, that, I mean, that's a good introduction to the wapato or the duck potato. And over at honestfoods.net or honest-food.net, it's Hunter, Angler, Gardener, Cook. And they have an article here about wapato or arrowhead chips. And it goes into some detail about pretty much the same kind of stuff about how to find it, where to find it. And it's well worth reading. And they have some really good pictures there of what they found and what they did. And they cut them into and basically made potato chips out of. So it's worth going over there, reading that article, taking a look. This is something that I have found. We have some here on the north side of our farm that is an area that is fed by basically just a big swamp, big old cypress swamp. And one of the areas I noticed them years ago when looking around was there's a little slough that runs up in. It's currently somewhat dry, but if you dig about a foot and a half down, you'll hit sand and the water just starts pouring in. But there were a bunch of these here, and I actually harvested some with the intent of trying to relocate them to a freshwater pond that we have on our somewhere else on our farm. That it was a it had never, as far as I know, there's very little. It was an old sand pit, and I'm going to try to get some of these duck potatoes to propagate there and see if they'll spread. And then I'm also going to go in there at some point and add in some cattail into that, try to introduce that there, because it's kind of a, I don't know, call it sterile, but because it's not sterile by any means. But it is a pretty barren pond, but there's plenty of fresh water, and I've actually gathered some water there and purified it, boiled it, and used it for making coffee in a challenge put out by Pastor Joe Fox over at Viking Preparedness. And that's another good resource if you want to go over there and watch his videos on YouTube. He puts out some really good information. As a former Special Forces Operations guy, he knows what he's doing. So that's going to wrap it up really right now for the Weed of the Week. And what I want to get into this week about basically is about food storage. And this is a subject that is as deep and as informative as you can find in the preparedness community. And one of one good resource if you are interested in preparedness is the LDS Church. Now, you don't have to necessarily agree with all of how they do things or some of their beliefs, but they really focus on preparedness. And if they are true followers of the LDS Church, they have a pretty good preparedness mindset. So I'm linking to an article at the Survival Cache, and it's a book review on the preparedness book. It's a quick article, and I'm going to read it real quick. Sometimes in life, you get a pleasant surprise that will make you smile. Then there are times when you are so surprised that you gasp with joy. This was the case when I got the LDS Preparedness Manual and read it. Did I mention it was free? The disclaimer. First off, let me start by saying, again, the Survival Cache is free of politics, religion, and of course, it's free from advertisements. There are so many other sites that focus on those subjects that we decided to keep our site focused on survival and emergency preparedness. We are not for or against any political party, nor are we for or against any religion. And for that reason, we chose not to write on those topics. However, we are against advertisements and plan to stay that way. When we do come across items that contain excellent information for our community, we do not care who wrote it or where it came from. The bottom line for us at Survival Cache is, could it help one of our readers survive or be prepared for an emergency? The LDS Preparedness Manual is an overwhelming yes. If you don't feel like going further in this book review, then just click on the following link and download the LDS Preparedness Manual for free, print it off, and keep it somewhere in your house. Yes, you heard it here first. The LDS Preparedness Manual is free. Brought to you by the Friendly Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormons. No sign-ups required. No guys in suits are showing up at your front door during football game. Nothing zippy, nada. It's free. While this manual is not specifically endorsed by the LDS Church, it is put together and edited by members of the church for using information and they have gained from their own experiences. Other publications in this and information that is available on the internet, which is probably why they're not charging for it. Mormons. There are a lot of TV shows with guys who know a lot about survival. Michael Hawk's show, Man, Woman, Wild. Then there's Les Stroud's Survival Man. And of course, Bear Grylls versus Man versus Wild. All of these actors slash survivalists on these shows know that when it comes to survival and emergency preparedness, the Mormons wrote the book, and they are still adding chapters to it. Myself, I am not a Mormon. I grew up Catholic, but I grew up in the southeast Iowa and had a lot of friends who were LDS. My family often went across the Mississippi River to Nuevo, Illinois, which is a sacred place for the Mormon religion, where we saw some of their preparedness firsthand when we visited local stores that sold preparedness type products. I have a lot of respect for their knowledge and their dedication being self-reliant. I would almost guarantee that if a natural disaster hit Salt Lake City like Katrina hit New Orleans, the U.S. government wouldn't even bother to send FEMA. They would just say, dude, that city full of Mormons. They are not going to need our help. They wrote the book on emergency preparedness. Overview. The LDS Preparedness Manual is a monster 222 pages of information. They cover a lot of topics. This is not a wilderness survival guide, and I would never keep this in my bug out bag. It's way too big. This is more of a preparedness Bible of sorts, and in general, more towards bugging in and being ready for anything. However, this is a small section of setting up a bug out bag, which they called the Deluxe 96-hour kit. They give you 2 pages of ideas for your kit, and they cover about everything you would need to survive for 96 hours or longer. The rest of the manual provides an excellent overview of food storage, emergency cooking, basic food lists, money, clothing, emergency shelter, water purification, and emergency toilets, terrorism, money, quarantining of epidemics, fuel storage, NBC, nuclear, chemical, and biological, or nuclear, biological, and chemical attacks, and much, much more. Pros. First big pro is this manual is free and it's awesome. At 222 pages, This manual is information overload. That is why I printed it off and put it in a binder. Just read small sections at a time. I love the many checklists throughout the manual. For example, you could just take pages 124 through 127 with you to the grocery store and use it as a guide checklist for all the food that you would need to be prepared, except for MREs listed in those pages as well. Cons. There is about 10 to 12 pages of religious text in this manual. Did it bother me? No. It might bother some people, but the bottom line is that this is a free from the LDS church members, and beggars can't be choosers. Download it, print it, read it, store it. Click here, and they have a link to, their initial link there is dead. For some reason, it gives me a 404, but there's a couple other places that they have that you can link to and download the manual. It's a really good, I've heard a lot of good things about it. I have not read this manual myself. I did download it, and if you click on one of their links, it takes you to a website called Another Voice of Warning, and it gives you an opportunity. You can actually buy a bound copy of this manual for about $22. So it may be something that I'm going to look at getting because printing 200 pages, it could get pretty quick. Get kind of expensive pretty quick. So it might be worth purchasing a printed copy. Another website over, or another place to look over at Ask the Prepper. And they have an article there called The Only 15 Rules for Your Prepper Pantry. And this goes into a lot of detail. The 15 rules, it goes into a lot of information, and there's about 32 comments. This article is from 2017. Let's see. So the only 15 rules of your prepper pantry. Building a food pantry with enough of the right foods can be an overwhelming undertaking. Knowing what to stock requires research and planning. Keeping track of it all is another task entirely. But don't let yourself become discouraged. We are here to make it easier. While we won't be giving you specific lists of foods to store, our goal is to provide you with the strategies and the ways to think about food storage so that you have everything you need when the time comes. If the whole idea leaves you stressed out and frustrated, start slowly. Prepare and pack away a 3-day emergency food supply. Then move up to a 2-week or a 1-month supply. Gradually grow your food storage as your time and funds permit. No matter how long your emergency supply, follow these rules to build a successful food storage pantry. 1. Buy the foods that your family eats on a regular basis. Food calculators that recommend hundreds of pounds of grains and a person per person will help you stock up quickly and whole grains store for long periods. But when hard times hit, will you know how to cook and consume hard red wheat in its natural form? No matter which foods you choose to store, make them part of your daily diet. You must know how to use the foods you store. Another possibility is to store foods in a form that you use regularly. Buy rice, pasta, oats, and other grains that you know how to cook and enjoy eating. One strategy is to develop a food storage alternative to the foods you eat regularly. For example, you might store 12 pounds of pasta, 12 jars of pasta sauce, and 12 pasta meals. For 30 menus, this way you will have a year's supply of lunches or dinners. 2. Consider nutritional content when planning your food storage. The pasta meal mentioned has plenty of carbs and serving or two of vegetables depending on your pasta sauce, but you may seriously be deficient in protein and possibly fat. Even meat pasta sauces are often low in protein. Make sure you store adequate amounts of carbohydrates, protein, fruit, and vegetables, and healthy fats. In a survival situation, you will be stressed and your body needs a full range of nutrients to keep it healthy. Also consider adding multivitamins or supplements in your food storage. 3. Plan for increased caloric needs. You will be working hard and need energy. Plan on a minimum of 2,000 calories per person per day, and possibly more. Many of the commercial food storage companies sell an all-in-one types of food storage that are deficient in calories. If you would consider purchasing one of these plans, consider it a basis to work from, but add fruits, proteins, fats to increase the nutrition and caloric values. 4. Stock adequate protein. Most low-cost food storage plans recommend storing lots of beans. Legumes and beans are a good choice. They are high in protein and fiber and are a heat since they are cheap. You can get a lot of food for your money with beans and legumes. However, if no one in your family will touch a bean dish, they may not be any good choice for you. Instead, store canned or freeze-dried meats or try textured vegetable protein, TVP, which you choose. Serve them regularly so your family is accustomed to the flavor and texture. 5. Use and rotate your food stocks regularly. Treat your food storage pantry as a backup supply. Use foods and resupply the pantry on a regular basis. Follow the first in, first out, or FIFO strategy. These foods you buy this week go to the back of the pantry, with the older items rotating to the front. Use the older supplies first. You can ignore this advice if you have purchased a 15 or 20 year storage plan. However, you still need to rotate as expiration dates approach. Once your pantry is established, you will be able to save money on groceries by shopping sales and stocking up when prices are low. For example, when pasta is on sale, look over your pantry as you make your shopping lists. Buy enough to replenish the used pasta and supply your daily needs until the next sale. If you are building a 3-month pantry, you might buy a 6-month supply on the first sale, 3-month supply for storage, and 3-month supply for use until the next sale. Then replace what's used with subsequent sales. 6. Don't ignore basic cooking and baking needs. When planning your menus, make sure that you store everything you need to make a meal. A 50-pound bag of flour is almost useless if you forget to stock up on yeast, baking soda, and baking powder. You'll be stuck with tortillas for every meal, assuming you remember to stock lard. Store everything that you normally keep in your pantry for everyday use. 7. Don't forget spices and condiments. This is another category often gets ignored or understocked. Basic spices and condiments can make a big difference in flavor. That soup recipe that uses bouillon cubes or canned chicken stock will not be as tasty when prepared with water. Yes, the nutrition is still there, but you won't enjoy it nearly as much. Stock all the basic herbs, spices, and condiments you normally use. 8. Store some easily prepared foods. In a survival situation, there will be days when you're too exhausted to spend hours cooking. For these days, a supply of quick cooking meals, freeze-dried meals, or even peanut butter sandwich can make all the difference. This is especially important if your food supply contains mostly long cooking proteins like beans. 9. Store high-energy snacks that can double as a meal when the time is short. Snacks like trail mix, granola bars, peanut butter and crackers, nuts, or dehydrated fruit can substitute for a quick meal when necessary and keep your energy up during demanding tasks. 10. Plan for a well-balanced and hearty breakfast. Oatmeal with fruit, eggs with hash browns, and other breakfast menus that will give you protein and energy boost to start the day. When you're working hard, a good breakfast is a must. 11. Don't forget vegetables and fruits. Your plan may include a garden, which will supply you with fruits and vegetables. However, you need enough fruit and vegetable stores to last until the garden comes in. If you already supply all your fruits and vegetables from the garden, you're probably to dehydrate, can, or freeze your excess in the winter for use in the winter. Your food storage plan should include enough fruits and vegetables to get you through the winter as a minimum. 12. Store alternatives for refrigerated items. Store powdered milk, powdered or freeze-dried cheese and sour cream, powdered eggs, etc. Store everything you need to make your recipes. Assume that you may not have refrigeration during a survival event and plan accordingly. 13. Plan a variety of meals. Many food storage plans make up the use of the same basic foods over and over. There may be plenty of food available, but you may experience a loss of appetite when you eat the same foods all the time. Instead, store a large variety of foods that you have choices at all times. 14. Plan reasonable serving sizes. A standard serving of rice is a half to one cup dependent on your food plan. Likewise, a serving of beans is a half to a cup in a normal daily food plan. But these serving sizes assume that they are being served as side dishes. In a situation where beans and rice are the main dish or the entire meal, you want larger servings. And 15. Keep track of expiration dates. While an expiration date is not a firm deadline, you will want to make sure that your food in your pantry is fresh. Using the FIFO method of food storage will make sure your food is fresh. Once a year, inventory your pantry, look at expiring foods. Many foods keep much longer than their expiration dates, but move the expiring and expired foods to the front for use shortly. If you are not using the foods often enough, keep the supply fresh, then perhaps it doesn't need to be in your storage pantry. Keeping a deep pantry doesn't need to be stressful if you are reasonably organized. You'll have a successful experience, but even the unorganized person can successfully keep a deep pantry for the FIFO, first in, first out, method of rotation. And I hope that these rules make your food storage decisions easier and less stressful. If you follow them consistently, add to your pantry, you'll build up an ample food supply, and over time, you'll have what you need in emergency. So like I said, there's 32 odd comments on this. Again, the article's from 2017. And it's just a good guide. It doesn't tell you necessarily, hey, this is what you should do or what you shouldn't do. It's just some rules to kind of get you going. And I'm going to tell you, like I made a comment on a podcast the other day that right now, a 10-pound bag of rice at Food Lion, which is my main grocery store here where I live, is like $4.50. I mean, it's less than $5 for 10 pounds of rice. I mean, that's an easy, quick way to kind of build up a food pantry. Yes, I mean, you could get burnt out on rice, but I mean, you could take and cook a pot of rice, add in a few wild edible plants that you gathered, whether it be some wapato, you know, which would kind of double up on starches, but find some things that's protein. I mean, if you went out, being in a coastal area, I think a lot about fish and crabs and things of that nature that are available and fairly easy to catch. If you don't know how to use a cast net, you should learn. It's a good resource. But you could take a couple of small fish and clean them up, put them in a pot of water with the rice, a little bit of salt and pepper, maybe some hot sauce. I mean, something that I like to stock up on, and make a, you know, a fish stew, and, you know, maybe have some stuff that you can thicken it with, going back to cattail. I mean, there's a lot of resources out there that if you just know what you're looking for, you can stretch these foods and make them do a lot for you. So I got to thinking today about what's going on in our country right now. And in the Midwest, there's, and I can't recall exactly where I read this, but there's approximately 31 million acres of farmland that has not been planted in corn. That's usually planted in corn. There's 31 million acres that are short on corn this year. And as of right now, the markets don't reflect, but I think that you're going to see here in the very near future, you're going to see a jump in food prices just because corn is a big indicator. And I was a little reluctant to kind of jump on the bandwagon, and I'm still holding fast right now, but here in the East, we're kind of almost in a drought. I'm looking at the corn are, for the most part, our corn looks fairly decent, but the problem is we had some really dry weather at some very bad times. And in turn, what has happened is that basically the corn was pollinating and it was too dry. And so the corn cobs didn't fill out or haven't necessarily filled out all the way. And that's not 100% across the whole farm. I mean, we've got nearly 1,000 acres of corn. So you're going to have some good and some bad. But as you go along right now, early on, the corn was hurt because we went through a dry spell. We got a little bit of rain. It kind of gave it a little relief. It was able to kind of pop up and recover a little bit from it, but it was already hurt. And then here lately, we've been back in another long dry spell. And I mean, there are whole sections of our cornfields that are just pitiful looking. The corn is dead or dying, and it's just brown. It looks like it's drying down already, and it hadn't even completely matured. So it's something that I'm paying attention to, that we are, we may see, and I don't want to be the Chicken Little running around going, the sky is falling, but when I see what's going on in the Midwest, and I see what is going on our farm locally, man, it's cause for concern. So get out there, get some, go ahead and work. If you don't have some food put up, and it doesn't have to be a whole lot to start out with, but you need to start putting some stuff back, even if it's just some 10-pound bags of rice. Go to Amazon, get some Mylar bags, look on YouTube. Man, there's probably 1,000 videos on how to store food in Mylar bags. Get you some oxygen absorbers and put some rice. Go to Lowe's or wherever and buy some 5-gallon buckets. You can put about 30 pounds of rice in a 5-gallon bucket in separate 10-pound bags, and put it away, stick it under a bed, stick it in a closet, something. You know, that rice can go a long way. There are whole societies that subsist on almost nothing but rice and fish. I mean, granted, we're not accustomed to that kind of diet, but it's something. You know, and what's the old story of the rock soup, where people went into town and they're like, begging for food and nobody had anything, but they went to the center of town and somebody brought a pot and they just, you know, put a rock in the pot, added some water, and people started coming up. Hey, what are you doing? And so they, people started adding, hey, I got some carrots. I've got some this, I've got some that. And basically in a survival situation or grid down or, you know, just tough times, go look at the Great Depression. You know, we learn from history, but being able to make a big pot of rice and throwing in some dock greens or some dandelion or some lamb's quarter or whatever you have, some greens that you can throw in there, a couple of fish that you caught, a couple of squirrels. Maybe you're lucky and have the ability to harvest some deer. And, you know, if you don't have refrigeration or the ability to freeze or can or whatever, you might have the ability to, if you are to harvest a large animal like a deer, that you can share it with your community. There are going to be people that can't do everything for themselves, and you may need to help them out. Community is everything. James Walton over at the I Am Liberty show and the Prepper Broadcasting Network, you know, he's a big, big community guy. He's written some books on it. And so, I mean, you're not going to be able to survive as a lone wolf. You've got to have community. You've got to have friends and family that you can depend on and that can depend on you. So, you know, get out there. I'm a member of PrepperNet, and we hold our meetings. I have a meeting that I do every month in Washington, North Carolina, and it's a good way. And I believe I've talked about it before, but you've got to network, you've got to know people, and you've got to get out. And if that's outside your comfort zone, hey, I'm sorry, but you know, you're not going to make it by yourself. You've got to look out for what's best for you and your family. And so get out there and get started. We're going to see some tough times. I believe there's going to be some tough times coming. So get out there and do what's best for you and your family. So I'm not going to beat that one to death. Get your food preps going. Get something, some extra canned goods. Rice, beans. I don't have a lot of beans. It's not my big thing, but I mean, rice is important, I think. Anyhow, so really, you've got to make the determination what and how much you're going to have. So that LDS guide, you can look up on the website. They have some food calculators, and that article, the one article there, the 15 rules, they're right. I mean, unless you're you know, working with fresh grains all the time, it might be a little interesting. I mean, I'd love to have a grain mill, something that I can grind wheat with, because you know I know where some wheat is. We grow it. We grow, you know, 300 or 400 or 500 acres depending on the year. Of course, it's a different type of wheat. It's a soft red winter wheat, and it's not necessarily great for bread, but you could do other things with it. So anyway, let's jump into the Gear Whore Gear Closet this week. And I really don't have a lot to say. Just wanted to talk about, I'm continuing with my ankle medical kit, test and evaluation. I did wear the Tack Buddy for an extra week, just because I didn't get a full week in with it. So I went ahead and wore it again. I'm very pleased with the Tack Buddy. It's a great device, pretty well thought out. I mean, I have some issues with it, but you know, it's made for more than just an ankle medical kit. It's a little bit bulkier maybe than some of the other offerings out there. I did get a message today. I'm pretty excited that I'm getting another ankle holster to try out. It is basically going to be a loaner unless I decide to buy it. I'm not going to mention what it is until I know exactly. I know that it's been shipped and it's on its way, but I'm pretty excited about that one. It was one that I really wanted to try out, and I've been reaching out through different means, and finally I sent them a message today and they got back to me and said they'd be glad to send one out, and they said that they would ship it out the next day. So it'll be cool. Hopefully I'll get that and be able to get it tested out. So yeah, a little short this week on the Gear Whore Gear Closet. I'm probably going to look at some other things to try to talk about here shortly, maybe mix in. But my focus right now is on this test and evaluation that I've been working on. It's kind of become a bigger endeavor than I had actually anticipated, just because I've gotten so much more feedback or so much more participation than I had really anticipated. So, which is a good thing, but it's also a lot of work. I've enjoyed wearing the ankle medical kits. It's different. I've carried for probably about a year. I've carried a pressure dressing and a tourniquet and some gauze with me every day, and not always gloves, but I've always had something, at minimum a tourniquet, and I like having it on my ankle. I know what I've got. It's there all the time. And so it's if you're interested in that, really take a look at some of the offerings that I've looked at. They're well worth having. They're not bad to carry. I don't ever wear shorts or anything like that, so it's not a big deal for me to carry one. Having said all that, I just want to thank everybody that has listened, downloaded, and really participated in this podcast. I want to thank my two Patreons for helping me out. Please, please, if you listen to this and you get anything out of it, please consider going to Patreon and looking up the Dope Farm podcast. And, you know, pledging a couple dollars a month. Every little bit helps. This stuff is not free. The bandwidth and the storage for the podcast is not free. So the website hosting, all that stuff, it costs money. It costs money to do this stuff. So anyhow, if you can, you know, great. And if not, hey, you know, I'm not charging for this, so it's free. But I do want you to go to Facebook. If you're on social media, please go to Facebook and like and share the page. Go to join the Facebook group and, you know, let's have a discussion. Come on over. Let's talk. Let's talk about, you know, whatever you want to talk about. That's in the preparedness or wild plants or whatever it is you want to talk about. Come on over, let's talk about it, and let's have a good time. Let's get informed, find some like-minded people to be able to be a part of your group. I want to say God bless you and God bless America. And if you feel depressed or down or need help, don't be afraid to reach out. Call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. It's available 24 hours a day. If you need help, get help. There's no need to do anything rash. So again, God bless you and God bless America.